Welcome to another episode of Records Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the magic of music. I'm your DJ, your MC, the host on the East Coast. I'm Ben Montgomery. Joining me is the man who, when I wanted to start the podcast, I told him he should join me as my co-host, and all I ever got from him was a definite maybe. Here's my co-host from the left coast, Wayne Fugate.
Hola, Ben, I mean.
For this episode, we have...
Still on the fence.
For this episode, we have a special guest. You might remember him from our Beat Farmers episode. His daughter, Melanie, appeared on a Ramones episode with us, and he's the reason for Ryan Heller joining us a few months ago. Please welcome back to the podcast, friend of the podcast, and one of our Patreon revisitors, Phil Berg.
Greetings, all. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're doing well. Good. Welcome back.
Well, I'm excited to be here. I was thinking about this for the last 6 months.
It's been a while since we chatted about getting you back on. Scheduling is a lot of fun, as I probably complain and moan about on a regular basis. Right, Wayne?
Maybe.
Yeah, I do. So... all right. Well, Phil, you know how we start every episode. So we ask the all-important question. Why don't I start with you? What t-shirt are you wearing?
I'm wearing my Buddy Guy concert t-shirt. He was recently on tour up in the San Diego area. I did not go. I had my assistant manager buy it for me, but I saw Buddy Guy open up for Stevie Ray Vaughan way back in the late 80s.
Nice.
So I told him that go see Buddy Guy, get me a t-shirt, or you can't get the day off. So
very good. Throwing a little managerial authority around, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
And Buddy Guy is actually on tour this summer with John Hiatt. So that's a good double bill.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, good double bill.
I'm not sure who he opened up for or who opened up for him this time. This is about 2 months ago here in San Diego.
Yeah.
But he did open up for Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I saw Bonnie Raitt open up for Stevie Ray Vaughan just, a couple of years afterwards.
So you saw Stevie Ray live back in the day?
Twice. I saw him twice.
Very good. Very good. All right, Wayne, how about you? What t-shirt are you wearing?
I'm wearing my farmer's t-shirt that Phil sent me.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, I am also wearing my farmer's t-shirt that Phil sent me. So
That's the second time for you, Ben.
It is. It is. I'm a double barrel here. I'm not like Wayne. I never drew a line in the sand.
You never backed yourself into that corner.
Never backed myself in the corner of, I'm not going to wear a t-shirt twice or more on the podcast. I just won't. I won't do that. And he's not married right now either. So he has a little more closet space and more budget that he can work with as well. So.
Well, it's an honor for you guys to wearing it, so I'll make sure I'll share it to their the farmer's site, and hopefully they can see it or hear it. So,
I have reached out to the farmers a few different times to see if somebody from the band would want to come on the podcast, and they have not returned any of my messages. So,
I'll keep pushing.
Yeah.
Keep pushing when I run in, when I talk with them or whatever it might be. Hopefully this will be the catalyst.
I mean, honestly, I've gotten to the point where it's like I give the three strike mentality, where it's I will reach out to somebody three times. If they either string me along or they don't ever get back to me, we're moving on. There's plenty of people, as you know, Phil. I mean, it took us 6 months to get you back on the podcast. I don't, and this is not a hum, this is not supposed to be sounding like a humble brag, but we don't have any problems with getting guests on the podcast.
That's good. And all your guests that you've brought on were very interesting. I think the one, you know, besides Ryan, yeah, we really like, you know, really liked what it was Carolyn Spence. I mean, she's, you know, very special individual. I think we all will agree with that. So
absolutely. We absolutely love Caroline, and she's got a new album coming out. In fact, by the time this episode comes out, I think her new record will be out. And I just got an email today that my shipment for a signed album from her has been delayed a week because she got COVID. So hopefully she is recovering well on that. But yeah, and hopefully we will have her back on the podcast, because we've had her on twice and we absolutely love Caroline. So
yeah, her songs and her lyrics, there's the one that I really fell in love with, and it, you know, really hit home, is the "I just want somebody to love me." And because you know, my daughter, you know, Melanie, she has an issue with depression, and I didn't know and I understand how to deal with it. But when she was on the show the first time around, she discussed why she wrote it and how it really puts a lot of sense, you know, how I can deal with her depression. So it meant a lot to me. So
absolutely. All right. Well, we occasionally will have our revisitors submit scores for various albums that we're talking about. One of the ones that we did several months ago was about Meat Loaf's "Bat Out of Hell," and I think that Wayne and I kind of gave you a little bit of ribbing on the recording because of some of your scores that you submitted, Phil. So this is your opportunity.
A little.
This is your opportunity to give us a rebuttal and let us know why you scored it the way that you did.
Okay, there's two stories here about two different songs. Okay, so "Dashboard Lights." I was introduced to Meat Loaf probably around 88, and I was cooking for a chain restaurant in San Diego, and we had an open kitchen, and the fellow cook that I worked with, he loved Meat Loaf, and he's singing that song during the cooking, during the shift. And again, we had an open kitchen, so the whole restaurant could basically hear his nasty voice. So he said, you know, so he introduced me to that, so I ended up picked it up, and I wound up playing, I wound up being the female, singing the female verses. And we were, you know, bouncing off each other, you know, thinking, stop right there, need you know, that part right there. And we were making actually some money from the guests. We made, you know, a few bucks here, a few bucks there, but usually the comment was, get singing lessons. You guys are terrible, you know, so. And then, you know, I scored "For Crying Out Loud," the top. Well, "For Crying Out Loud" is my wife and our song that we share on long trips in the car. I would sing it to her very poorly, but I would sing it to her. So I had a hard time getting those high pitches or that Meat has, but it's it's just one of our special songs, and I fell in love with it. So
if I remember right, Wayne, Alex really liked that song as well, right? Didn't have it as his top song, but I think that he had it pretty high.
I believe.
I'm sorry, I screwed up the scoring for you guys.
didn't touch our scores. We were scoring the revisitors different from Alex, myself, Wayne, and Rick. So all good.
But you know, that song, it was a hard song to sing to my wife because it lasted forever. So.
Which you described pretty much every song off of that particular album, though.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Yeah, I think every song is what, 11 minutes long, or something.
Except for "Heaven Can Wait," I think that's sure. That's the shortest song, I believe. So.
Yeah, I might be exaggerating, but all the songs.
But still, it's about right.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Phil, tell us what album we're going to revisit for this episode.
We are going to visit the Kinks. The name of the album is State of Confusion. And I think, and there was, you know, what we found out earlier is that there was two versions, the cassette version with an extra two or three songs and then the album. And it was puzzling because I thought that I was on Give the People What They Want because I heard the songs before, and then it makes sense, cassette only, which I think that was the last time. It was the first thing I bought, first Kinks State of Confusion album that I bought. So it was on cassette.
Yeah, so we're referring to the songs Noise and Long Distance. So for this episode, we're going to just score the vinyl, the record version of this. And I thought when I got the record, so I bought the record several months ago, and I thought this is way shorter than I remember because I did have it on cassette back in the day, and it wasn't until us really digging into this and putting, some of our notes, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Noise and Long Distance both were dropped off of the record version, but they still exist on the cassette version. So there you go. So there's the reasoning on that. I mean, Phil, since you've already brought it up. So if we were to score Noise and Operator, where would those songs reside on your scoring? High or
right in the middle? Right in the middle. Five and six. Yeah.
Okay. Wayne, how about you? Actually, I said Operator. There's a part in there that's Operator. It's actually Long Distance is the name of it. Yeah. It's not Jim Croce.
Noise would be in the top half and Long Distance would be in the bottom half.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, as you will tell from the score, my scores are different from your guys's, and the songs I chose higher are all have a similar sound.
You went on the rock side of things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's give some background info. But first, I want to hear, so Phil, there's a ton of Kinks records, and I know that you're a Kinks fan. Why this one?
But with the State of Confusion and all the songs that are in it, it just reminds me of everyday life that I have to deal with, it seems like, whether it's family or work. Ray has this knack that when he writes a song, he writes something about something so mundane that happens every day and turns it into, you know, a great story. And and this particular album is part of, I call it a trilogy. Probably in 1991, 90, 89, in that range, I saw them play with the Word of Mouth Tour. I think that was around that time. And all those three particular albums, the songs pretty much sounded the same, but they were all different and have different little stories and nuances with it. But I think that Ray, doesn't matter what song it is, he always has a story behind it that really makes you think, okay, yeah, I deal with this crap every day, you know. Yeah. And that, so, but you know, it's, but you know, my gateway was Lola, and Lola was kind of an interesting song, which you can't probably write around these days, but once I heard all the other songs that came up in their repertoire, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. I like this. There's some really good songs that stood out, and there's some other songs that, you know, don't sound good on the vinyl, but when you hear them live, they sound so much different, so much better.
What's interesting, so this is the 20th studio album from the band. And I guess maybe I should have done the math. They've been around since the early 60s, but that's essentially one album per year for 20 years. That's nuts. And to have an album that has so many classic songs like this one does, and again, going back to Noise and Long Distance, those are your quote-unquote throwaway songs. Most bands would kill to have a song like Long Distance.
If you go back and look at all the Kinks albums, and each album seems to only have two songs that really stand out, and the rest are, you know, so-so. I mean, you know, Celluloid Heroes, that album has one or two good songs. I was thinking of Misfits at one point, but there was really only two good songs, Misfits and Rock and Roll Fantasy, that were on that album that I really enjoyed. And this is the first album.
There's two songs maybe that are big hits or like really good, but I that whole string of albums of theirs in the 70s are full of really good songs, just like this. This is 10, 9 really good songs. Misfits and Celluloid Heroes and Muscle Well Hillbillies and all. I mean, even, you know, Powerman, Lola, the Powerman and the Money Go Round or whatever. All of those, there's always bigger, like, commercial hits, but they're all the, he's a tremendous songwriter. Those are really good, underappreciated songs.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Wayne, on that. It's you have to really, I guess for me, to be in the mood and really deep dive into them. You know, it seems like there's like one or two songs that pop out I really, really, really enjoy. You know?
Yeah.
I was going to say, they got two, albums, The Preservation Act, Part 1 and Part 2, which is, you know, almost like a Tommy and Quadrophenia, but not as good. But there's only like, on those albums, there's only like one song in each of the albums seems to be a standout too, so.
Yeah. All right, so I mentioned that this came out in 1983. You okay? All right, I mentioned that this came out in 1983. It did not crack the top 10. It peaked at number 12. And so I was curious on what was keeping it out of the top 10. And the top 10 is pretty stacked. So I'm gonna share with you the top 10, and you let me know if you have ever A, owned the album, and B, if you still own the album. Okay, ready? So here's the top 10. 10 was Prince's 1999. Wayne?
Yes.
Bought it then, still have it now.
Okay. Phil, how about you?
I used to own it.
Okay, that's a travesty that you don't still own it, Phil.
I know. I agree.
Okay. Number 9, Styx's Kilroy Was Here. Wayne.
Have never had it.
Okay, Phil.
I got it and still have it.
Okay. That is one Styx record that I do not own. I think I own all of the other ones around that time, but I don't have that one. At some point, I'll find it in a bargain bin and I'll buy it. All right. Number 8, Cuts Like a Knife from Bryan Adams. Wayne.
Had it on cassette. I think I have it on CD. I'm not positive.
Okay. Phil.
I think I have it on CD.
Okay. I also own it on CD.
I bought it on cassette after he opened up for Journey at my very first concert.
Mine too. We were at
and
the
there's
same.
Some side boob in the Cuts Like a Knife video on MTV.
Side boob.
It was a lot in 1983.
Yeah. Okay. Number 7, H2O from Daryl Hall and John Oates. Wayne.
No.
Never owned it?
No. I've never owned a Hall and Oates record. I think I might have the greatest hits on CD, but I'm not even sure of that.
Okay. Phil?
Never owned it.
Okay. I have it. Signed by Oates. Need to get it signed by Hall. But I do own it. All right. We just talked about Journey Frontiers. Wayne.
I did have it on cassette. I do not have it.
Okay. Phil. Anymore.
I did have it at one point on cassette too, back in the day.
Okay. I still have it on record. All right, number five, Bowie's Let's Dance. Wayne.
I have it on CD.
Okay. Phil?
Bought it on cassette back in high school.
Okay. Yep. Had it on cassette. I now have it on CD. All right. Men at Work's Cargo. Wayne?
I did have it on CD. I did have it on cassette when it came out. Okay. I Overkill is my favorite.
It's great.
Men at Work song. I love the acoustic version just that Colin Hay does by himself also. But I do not have it on CD anymore. I do not have it any longer. I own no cassettes anymore.
Okay. Phil?
I have it on CD.
Okay. I have it on album signed by Colin Hay. All right. Third, Pyromania, Def Leppard. I already know the answer for Wayne.
Had it on cassette, have it on CD.
Yep. Phil?
One of my favorites of all time.
I still have it on CD.
Yep. I'm with Wayne. Had it on cassette, now have it on CD. One of these days, I'm going to get it on record as well. It's freaking expensive.
I tried to find that High and Dry picture disc on Record Store Day, but they were all out by the time I got down there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Second, Thriller. Wayne.
I don't think I didn't have it on cassette. I know my sister did. I don't have it on CD. I do have it digitally from borrowing it from a friend.
Yeah. I know what borrowing from a friend. This is first name Knapp and his last name Stir. Yeah.
I outgrew them quick. All right. There are other ones.
Okay. Phil, how about you? Thriller.
I never owned it, but my headbanger brother did.
Okay. All right. All right. Last but not least, The Police's Synchronicity. That was the number one record around that time, which I think Thriller and The Police were kind of flip-flopping from.
No, The Police, I still have the CD, and I've still played the crap out of it. So
great. Wayne?
I believe I have the CD and I have The Police box set.
Okay. And I had it on cassette and I have it on CD and...
Police Sidecast would be a good one, too.
I'm looking at my collection now. I do not have it on vinyl. One of these days. One of these days.
All right. That's a hard one to find. That's a hard one to find.
But believe it or not, it actually kind of is, which is really kind of surprising to me considering how many albums it has sold. I think that you can just kind of toss that up to how the vinyl market is just kind of stupid crazy right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've got a friend on Facebook. He keeps posting every couple days. He will go and take a screenshot of a record that is sold on eBay. And like, he's like, why would you pay $25 for High Infidelity from REO Speedwagon, considering there's like 10 million of these out in existence? But it's just what the market is right now.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah. I just bought Pink Floyd The Wall and I paid $30 for it and it's sealed. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, at least you're getting it sealed. So that's good. All right. Let's do this. Okay. One other note. So we already talked about noise and long distance. I love that under the reception section on Wikipedia, there's very little info about the album in whole. However, that section focuses on the song Long Distance, which was not on the record. I just think that it was maybe people need to go and update the Wikipedia page. Personnel, Ray Davies, of course. He produces this, provides lead vocals and acoustic guitar. Dave Davies is your electric guitarist for this and also provides lead vocals on one song. We'll get to that when we get there. Mick Avery is the drummer. He is, I don't know if he's the original drummer, but he was with them since 1964. This album is essentially his swan song.
Yeah, his last one.
So he decides after they get this hit with Come Dancing that he's like, it's a good way to go out on top. So Mick's done after this. Jim Rodford is the bass guitarist. I had to look this up because the name sounded familiar. Jim was a founding member of Argent. We've talked about Argent on a previous episode, not in a very good light, but we did talk about Argent. He was the bassist for the Kinks from 77 to 1996. And then we've got Ian Gibbons, who plays keyboards. He joined the band in 1979 and stayed with the Kinks for about 10 years is what I gathered. So there you go.
Wasn't that the time when they started using more of the keyboards? Because all their earlier songs are just the guitar and drums and the bass.
Yeah, I want to say that they were a four piece prior to the mid to late 70s, but I could be wrong. I am not I'm not a huge Kinks fan. I kind of posted this on social media today because we're recording this the night before I go see The Who. Or I know people are going to at me. So it's like, okay, this version of The Who with Roger and Pete. And it took me a lot of years. It's only, I would say, within the last 5 years that I've really become the diehard Who fan that I am today. And I think part of that was it seemed like a scary thing to go back and dig through the entire discography because there's so much. And that's kind of how I feel with the Kinks as well. I mean, I just mentioned 20 studio albums in a span of 20 years. If you're going to do a deep dive, that requires a lot of time and effort.
Oh yeah. And you know, and with that same thought with The Who, you know, Pete Townsend, he's got so many solo stuff. Yeah. Roger Daltrey has 3-4. Johnny Entwistle has 3. Even Keith Moon has an album out too. So it's really, you know, very, very in depth. With the Kinks, all the guys. Dave Davies has a couple of solo albums, and then Ray has a couple of solo albums. But you know,
still daunting, which is why I can't say that I am a huge Kinks fan outside of the couple records that I own. So, Wayne, would you consider yourself a huge Kinks fan?
I think huge might be a bit much, but I'm a large. Extra large.
You're a large
Kinks fan.
Okay. All right. Perfect. All right. As a reminder, our scoring is based off a number of songs on the record. Wayne, how many songs on this one?
It's 10. It's a perfect number.
Yep. So we're going to do the record, the vinyl version, which means top song is going to get 10 points. Next favorite, 9 points on down to least favorite, which gets a score of 1. So we're going to start this off with State of Confusion.
Fell down, I'm in a state.
All right, Phil, you want to get us started with this? Kick us off.
Well, the state of confusion, that song reminds me of my everyday life at work. I call it, instead of state of confusion, controlled chaos.
Yeah.
I remember one time that I woke up, just like the verse said, in a panic, looked at my clock, and I'm saying, crap, it's 12 o'clock. And I didn't realize it was still dark outside. It's like, you got myself into a panic. But even at work, in my restaurant, we just don't know what's going to happen from day to day. And we just basically, we run around like we're not sure what we're doing. You know, a guest comes in, panics or has a complaint, or we don't have no place to see them, or run out of food, or what have you. And then that's when the confusion starts out. But it's more, in my case, controlled, because I know what I'm doing and I'm just watching all the people around me, all my staff running around like chickens and relax. It's okay. It's going to work out. It's okay. And my score is, you gave it an 8.
All right, Wayne, how about you?
Oh, man, I love this. I love this as a way to start. So I looked to get an idea, and Dave Davies was approaching 40 years old when he wrote this. And I don't know about you. I don't want to speak for you. But as I got to 40, he captures that moment of approaching midlife. All of these things start to weigh on you when you... And I loved the end towards the end of the song that verse where he's on a freeway island. you don't know how you got there almost, and cars are ripping past you both ways. It was just a great analogy for midlife. But this musically has almost like a punk rock kind of feel to it. There's like a snarl in his voice that the angry young man becoming the grumpy old man, complaining about the house and the woodworms in the attic and the water heater is busted, the TV's busted. It's just it's a great starter. Good, it's always good to start with the title track, and this one brings it.
Yeah, this is pretty. Pretty much the plight of a homeowner, right? With all the things that tend to break down on you. So one other thing on this, so this would be considered a single. However, it wasn't officially released as a single in the U.S. It did, however, reach number 26 on the mainstream rock tracks chart. And I remember this being played on KISW back in the day, Wayne. So it did get some play. One thing that I thought was interesting. So prove me wrong. Is the guitar riff that Dave is playing, it's a little bit of a conglomeration of "You Really Got Me" and "All Day and All of the Night"?
There's several times on this record.
Yeah,
and actually, I was listening to another record right after this, and they completely lift the riff to Jumpin' Jack Flash and keep doing it over and over, almost like they're daring the Rolling Stones to sue them. but there was a couple of times on this record that I said, that sounds... In fact, there's one, it feels like the bass line to "My Girl" is used through the whole thing. There's often times where there are songs, and the last song has a very... It has a Chuck Berry feel to it, but almost like Chuck Berry might have wrote it. I mean, they really capture the Chuck Berry sound.
Got it. All right. Well, let's get scores. Wayne, what you got?
10. I think they come punching people in the face right out of the gate.
There you go. All right, Phil, what's your score?
I got 8.
Okay. And this is my 9. spoiler alert, top song. And that's mostly because we can't agree on anything else going forward, I think. Our scores are all over the place for this album. All right. Next song is Definite Maybe. I kind of feel bad about my score because this is a banger. It has a very, and again, this is time frame, has a very Modern Love Bowie vibe to me.
It has a new wave sound, but it's almost felt more California, kind of American new wave than necessarily British new wave, which you would think of. Because I always think British new wave, I think of kind of Human League, Duran Duran. Which all those guys were trying to be Bowie. That's why he came out with Let's Dance. But this one, I think, is a great piece to work with previously. Like I say, his albums, they feel like they're either concept albums outright, or he takes a theme and all of the songs on this record, all of them touch around this theme of middle age and getting older. And this one has a very grumpy old man, get off my lawn, you know, the government, complaining about the government, complaining about technology. This one, it feels like it's piggybacking off, and it's keeping that whole theme, that central theme alive.
Yeah. And there's also a lot of nostalgia on this record as well. So I can kind of see that there's a little bit of theme going on there.
You know,
what do you got on Definite Maybe?
Well, when you mentioned David Bowie, I can see that. I just forgot the name of the song that it sounded, Modern Love, that song during that era. That's what it kind of reminds me of, the whole beat and all that stuff. But, you know, in my case, running a business and you're calling up your vendors and they say the same thing. If I order like a bottle of, you know, certain liquor, well, we don't have it, but we can probably get it out to you next week. I go, so what you're saying is a definite maybe. I go, and they go, yeah, put it that way. It's, you know, it's just anything that you, it's dealing with an ex-wife or, you know, dealing with anything that you know, the government wise in particular, you know, puts everything in perspective, because now I don't have a lot of faith in certain people getting stuff done, knowing that, yeah, I'll get it done. That's a definite maybe.
We talking about politicians, Phil?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. I think that I didn't give this a very high score because it really does, a lot of the lyrics sound like my last job and my last employer.
Yeah, so. You know, when you mention that, yeah, I've worked in chain restaurants prior to what I'm doing right now, and it gets the same thing. It's like you put out an idea that could probably improve, whether the service or flow through or whatever it is, and it goes on to deaf ears unless they come up with that same idea and they take credit for it because, you know, it came from corporate.
All right, let's get scores. Phil, what do you got?
I got a 6.
Wayne?
7.
Okay, this is my 4. All right, Labor of Love is next.
Yeah.
Is that the Star Spangled Banner at the beginning?
No, it's like Jimi Hendrix playing the Wedding March.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah. It's the march. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I thought that was a great way. Jimmy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It definitely reminds you of Jimi Hendrix doing the Star Spangled Banner, which it absolutely does on purpose. But it's the Wedding March, which makes complete sense to this song. Right. This lyrically is one of the best songs. I mean, that two-headed transplant. What a great analogy. You get married and it's like sewing two heads on this one body. And that early on, that's great. And then as time goes on,
when the sex wears off and it's all give and take,
one person wants to stay in, one person wants to go out. It doesn't matter what you, so the play on words, labor of love is something that you work at really hard just because you love it, and they've transported labor into the actual meaning of the word, and this love is now a lot of work.
Yeah. I'm going to bring up Chrissy Hynde later, and I'm wondering if this song is about their relationship, because I can imagine that the line of, here's the line, Mr. and Mrs. Horrible are an example of what I say. They used to be so in love, now they fight so much that they frightened all their friends away. I can imagine that the line of that is probably about their relationship. Based off of what I know about Ray and Chrissy and just their demeanor in general. Maybe I'm wrong. Ray's never going to tell us.
No.
Phil, what do you got on this one? Anything?
Yeah, my ex-wife. It's one of my ex-wife's songs. And, you know, when we first, it's just like, it's the song just states, when we first got married, we were in love. And I think we both, when you have to work at it to make it work, then it's not really fun, I guess. Because, you know, there was a time during that relationship that I took it for granted, and when you're married to somebody that you thought you love or do you love, it's supposed to come naturally. You can't work at it, and that's what I got out of that song. It's, you know, it's one of those learning songs that now that I'm married to Donna, and it's going to be an entirely different, you know, situation and different perspective on things. So,
yeah, what's your score on this one, Phil?
I gave it a 2.
Okay. Wayne?
I gave it a 5, and I the only thing about it is maybe his kind of his delivery and the his vocals in the verse, because it has this great Love Stinks kind of riff, guitar riff in it. And I love the lyrics. It's just there's something about the way he sings it. It kind of, I think, coming off of two really rocking songs, there's a little bit of a letdown there. But I gave it a 5.
Okay, and this is my least favorite song. Not that I hate it. I just, there's a lot of songs that I like more. All right, Come Dancing next.
My sister's married and she lives on an estate. Her daughters go out, now it's her turn to wait. She knows they get away with things she never could. But if I asked her, I wonder if she would. Come dancing, come on sister, have yourself a ball. Don't be afraid to come dancing, it's only natural.
This, of course, was the first single. Came out on 45 back in November of 82, so well ahead of the album release. Was first released in the UK. From what I gather, it didn't chart initially. So Clive Davis, who is head of Arista, wasn't sure if he even wanted to release it as a single in the US. And sure enough, with the advent of MTV, with them having a video for this, gets released in April of 83 in the US and becomes a hit. In fact, this is the last major hit. Well, I'm sorry. This was the last top 10 hit that the band ever had. In fact, it was the highest charting U.S. single of their career. Tired of Waiting for You back in 1965 also reached number 7. So there you go. Little info on Come Dancing, and this is my top song. I dig the song. Always dug the song. This is the reason why I bought the cassette. Yes, I may have been swayed by the MTV video, or actually at this point, Wayne, I don't think I had, well, I didn't have MTV. This was all Friday night videos.
Yeah, I saw it on Night Tracks, I'm pretty sure.
Night Tracks, yeah. Phil, what do you got on Come Dancing?
You know, when I saw the video and the character that Ray was playing in that video, and then fast forward a few, 20 years, and I, dig a big deep dive into the characters of David Bowie, it reminded me of that. Because, probably in the different eras, he tried to be somebody different, during this whole thing. But what Come Dancing, I got kind of tired of it after a while. It's a really cool, riff with the keyboards at the beginning, but after a while, you kind of like, oh, okay, it's okay. But it reminded me when back in the late 80s, when I was out of high school and into college, I used to go to a bunch of concerts locally in San Diego at these nightclubs. And in the song Come Dancing, it talks about how things changed. To where you go to this one place and all of a sudden it's gone, it's closed down. I remember, seeing the Beat Farmers, the Bangles, some of those type of bands at San Diego State at this place called the Back Door, and it's no longer there. And there's places that I used to go to called the Bacchanal and Bodie's, when I turned 21, they're no longer there. But it's just one of those songs that say, just because they're not there, you can still enjoy the music, however you choose to enjoy it by. So,
yeah, there's plenty of places that are no longer in existence. John Lamoureux and I were lamenting about the Zephyr Club in Utah, where we saw a lot of the same acts that came through Salt Lake City, and it's no longer around. Wayne, there's plenty of places there in Seattle that we saw bands play that are no longer around.
But it's a very reflective too in regards to the places that are gone. I mean, I'll run into or be introduced to some people that grew up in the San Diego area during the same era that I grew up in, and I'd start naming off these places, and it's like, it takes them back to that time and place where they were, young, well, not necessarily innocent, I remember I used to do that. We did this. And then all of a sudden all these memories pop back up into their minds. And they're looking back. That was fun back then. What happened now? What's going on now?
Yeah. All right. I already said this was my top song. Phil, what do you got for a score?
I got 7.
Okay, Wayne.
Oh, 8. This is the first song. This is first time I saw the Kinks on the video on Night Tracks. But once again, it's continuing that theme. But now he's bringing in somebody else and it's giving it a little bit of a different perspective. And then the sister gets the same business when she gets older and has a daughter.
Yep, for sure. All right, next song is Property.
Started off with
All right. I already mentioned Chrissy Hynde. This has to be about Chrissy, right?
It makes sense, yeah.
I didn't think that this would score high with Wayne, as I figured it might strike a nerve.
It hits close to home. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
It hits a little close to home. But I think the synthesizer was something I didn't like. I don't associate that with a Kink song. And that this bass line feels like it's exactly the same as the bass line in My Girl.
Okay. All right.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, I can see that. Phil, you got anything on this one?
I'm going to be just like with Wayne. Back in, 2000 or in 10, whatever it is, my wife at the time, we lost our house because of the whole, you know, the economic downturn, and that we actually, at that time, we were going through a divorce. So we had 30 days to get out of the house because we basically are walking away from it, and we're sitting in the garage together, not necessarily arguing, but trying to figure out who gets what. And just like one of the lyrics in the song about the pitchers, we were, we had a little disagreement on who gets certain pictures of the kids and all that stuff. So yeah, that brought me back. And those at that time, it was like, and thinking about it, I said, yeah, just take the pictures. And when the kids grow up, they're going to get them back anyway. So it's okay.
Yeah. You take the photographs, the ones of you and me when we both posed and laughed to please the family. Yeah. There's a lot of really great lines in this. I remember playing the crap out of this on cassette just because I always loved the part of the crescendo of, now that it's all over, now that you and I are free, and get your thumping drum parts in that. And yeah, I really dig this song. I see that my score is way higher than your guys's. I gave it my 8. Wayne?
A 4, and that's based on the lyrics. Because there's something musically, it's so out of style. I mean, they've done a bunch of different things, but this wasn't.
I love the style.
One of those things I liked.
Yeah, I love the style.
As much.
Yeah. Phil, what do you got for a score?
I got it a 3, and this song still resonates to this day dealing with the kid's mom. So.
I find it interesting that the one guy who hasn't been divorced gave it a higher score than the other.
It's because you don't know.
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
just make sure you take all the pictures that you want and hide them away, okay?
Okay. Well.
You better get that vinyl record collection boxed up and sent to a friend.
Yeah. And shirts. Yeah. Put your shirts away, too.
And shirts. All right. This is where we would flip the record over, so don't forget to dance. Second single off the record. Song charted, peaked at number 29 in the US, 58 in the UK. And from what I read, was it said that this was the last top 40 hit for the band. And I'm like, that's got to be wrong. Because I remember Do It Again from word of mouth getting some airplay. Sure enough, I did the research. Do It Again only reached number 41. So it was not a top 40 hit. So this, Don't Forget to Dance, last Kinks top 40 hit.
Wow.
Thought that was interesting. There is a video that goes along with that. Wayne, you didn't like this song.
No, it's very soft rock, adult contemporary. It's
a little too yachty for you.
It's even beyond that. It feels older than that and softer, mushier than that. But lyrically, I like he's keeping, you know, the central theme is there. This time it's from this perspective of this older woman. I thought that last verse where the young punks whistle at her and she kind of plays it off, but it's the highlight of her day kind of a thing. I thought that's some strong songwriting there.
All right. Phil, what do you got on this one?
This is, I'll call this, every song that's on this album has a theme to it that I find it that is, that I can connect with my everyday life or with my family. This is I call it the Melanie song. If you take out all the young boys whistle at her, you know, wouldn't stand for that. But there's the whole story behind that I got out of is Don't Forget to Dance is that, you know, with Melanie in particular, she tries so hard to make something of herself. And sometimes she will stumble. Sometimes she will, you know, get frustrated that she won't be able to accomplish what she really wants to do. And I told her one time is that, you know, it's like with all this stuff, all the, you know, the barriers that you're trying to overcome, just go back and don't forget to dance. Because, you know, when she was a kid, she was a great dancer. She still is. But, you know, it's like go back to something that you are comfortable with and just basically start over again and trying to make something of yourself.
Yeah. Leanne Womack, I think, stole this theme as well, right? Anyways.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
I hope you dance. I hope you dance. All right. This was my 7. Wayne.
1.
Boo. Boo.
This was my 9.
Yeah. All right. Phil, he tried to tank it out of our top 5, but luckily our high scores keep it.
You know what? In the top 5. You know why it is? It's the t-shirts that you guys are wearing.
Yeah. All right. Young Conservatives is next. Establishment is winning. Now the battle's nearly won. The rebels are conforming. See the fathers, now the sons. All the urgency and energy has turned into complacency. Now the schools and universities are turning out a brand new breed of young conservatives. Conservatives! I find this interesting and hilarious that this song was written in 1982, 1983 time frame, and yet the theme is still relevant 40 years later.
Yeah.
Timeless.
Timeless. Without getting too political, Wayne. Oof. Or can you even talk about this without getting political?
Yeah, well, I can. Yeah, it doesn't have to be specific. I think keeping along those themes of middle age, you start looking back, you see the kids around you. It always seems like we were more of a more rebellious when we were young. Every generation thinks that. When we were young, I was stealing Volkswagen emblems off the hood, front of Volkswagens. I don't know, but we seemed like we were much more rebellious and even politically. It just seems like kids get, the next generation is always not, you know, living up to the expectations set by the punk rockers of the previous generation. Every generation apparently feels that way.
Yeah, for sure. Phil, what do you got on this?
I find the song, it's very generational, just like what Wayne is saying. You know, you can put conservatives, liberal, independent, whatever it is. And when I was in college, this was in the late 80s, and I think Ronald Reagan, if I remember right, was president at that time. So there was a lot of conservatism that was running rapid, you know, throughout the whole college scene. And even the instructors were teaching, you know, that type of mentor. And as time progressed and as the we switched from right to left. Just colleges were, you know, promoting left-wing ideas or whatever it might be. But again, it's, you know, just like you said, this song is resonates. Doesn't matter what generation. I mean, when I was a kid, we believed a certain way. My daughter and my son believe something that's entirely different. And that whole time change, there's going to be the next generation is going to have a different time or a different thought process on how to do things. I mean, I'm feeling it right now and running my business. I got a lot of 18-year-olds that have different ideas on what they want to do or how to do it instead of, well, these are the rules that we have here. There's no room for, you know, creativity in regards to that.
Okay. Anything else?
No. I'm good.
Okay. All right. All right, Wayne, what do you got?
Oh, number 9. I think youth should be anti-establishment.
Okay.
Youth is supposed to be wasted on the young. You're supposed to be angry and rebellious. That's your only chance to do it.
Yeah, because what happens is that everything will just be the same generation after generation. It just shows that every generation is thinking different and seeing things differently.
Yeah. All right. This is my 3. Phil?
My 5.
Okay. Next song is Heart of Gold.
Then a little sister came along. Found all the affection suddenly gone. But underneath the cold exterior, I know you got a heart of gold. It's so aloof and so superior, but you got a heart of gold. Watch out! Don't get caught in the crossfire. Watch out! Still growing up, she's in a rage. I guess she reached that difficult day.
How is this not a single? This feels like a single. Does it not?
Yeah, to me it does. It stands out, you know, it's a little bit different than some of the other songs on this particular album.
I'm just going to let you talk because I see your score, Phil. So tell us why you love this song.
Again, it reminds me of Melanie. I know I'm talking more about all my stuff that I'm interacting with, whether it's family, friends, or work. But the one thing about my daughter, Melanie, is that she has a given personality. And with anybody who has a given personality, there's going to be a time to where it's going to be stepped on. Your heart's going to be stepped on, or you're going to be disappointed in the reactions and the results of what you're trying to do. And I think that in that case, the song resonates well with Melanie because way back when she was 10 years old, she did a nonprofit organization helping military veterans out. And she had these high expectations on her, you know, getting noticed by, like, you know, certain people who have other organizations, but it didn't work out. And she got really, really, really disappointed. But again, and I told her, you said, you know, don't ever give up. You have a heart of gold. Just remember that. Don't stop what you're doing. One day something is going to happen, and you're going to be, you know, satisfied with the results.
And now that I'm looking at the lyrics, where it's got the apple of your father's eye. So there you go. That's
yep.
Phil.
Yep.
Phil and Melanie, right there.
Yep.
Yep. Wayne, anything on this one?
No, I clearly like what they were doing on the Rockers. I feel bad for crapping all over Heart of Gold for Phil, but I didn't. I can say I didn't. I want to hear the grumpy old man.
On the first couple listens, I thought that maybe this was a veiled lyrics towards maybe Dave.
I heard he wrote it about after he saw it has to do with Princess Anne, because isn't she like Queen Elizabeth's sister? So she's like the she's the one, she doesn't get quite as much attention.
I watched The Crown.
And, you know, Ray did that once before with the song Victoria. And I thought it was Canada, but it's about Queen Victoria. So he's really got some affiliation with the royalty there.
Correct, correct. All right.
Well, they knighted him, so.
Yeah, he did. All right, this is my 5, Wayne.
3.
Phil?
10.
Okay. Next one is Clichés of the World, in parentheses, B-movie. The highest score out of all of us. What you got on this one?
Oh, like I say, this is, to me, this is where I think you add noise into this, get rid of the last song, you make this song the ender, because this song has a very closing track feel to it, but it's more that punky new wave sound. And then, you know, there's even like an allusions to suicide that's very middle age, at the end of your rope with work and life and all, and it all sounds like a boring B movie. These just vicious cliches that there's a reason they're cliches, because they're remarkably common.
This is on Spotify. This is the least listened to song off of the album. 71,000 listens. Come Dancing has 12 million. Don't Forget to Dance is 2.4 million. So that gives you any perspective of how varied that is. I don't have anything lyrically. Phil, you got anything?
Two words. Groundhog Day. That's just what this song reminds me. It's, it's just the mundane. Every day you're doing the same thing. You get up. You go to work, you drive into work, you do what you're supposed to do, and you get back in your car and you drive home, and hopefully dinner is ready. I mean, it's just everyday type of thing, you know, it doesn't change unless you change it yourself. So,
or I could sum it up in 1 year, 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You know, it's funny because everybody else, you know, basically shut down, and where I was working, we stayed open, and we kind of reaped the benefits. The owners of my restaurant said to the California governor, we're going to allow our guests make adult decisions. If you want to come in, dine in, you're more than welcome to. We didn't have any issues, but we still had some visits from government officials wondering why we're doing what we're doing. So.
Well, it's California, of course you had visitors.
But what's even funnier about it is that a frequent diner at the time was the mayor of San Diego. He kept, you know, and he sat inside. He sat his own little corner booth.
Nice. So. All right. This is my 2, Wayne.
6.
Okay. Phil?
4.
All right. Last but not least is Bernadette. If it sounds different on vocals, it's because Dave Davies is providing the lead vocals on this. I'm surprised, Wayne. I've got the highest score out of all of us. I thought that this would track better because it seems like
song.
It's okay.
It's lyrically, it's one of those songs you can't, you wouldn't be able to write today.
Right.
And also, I think part of it is that I think he had this middle-aged life theme running through it from different perspectives. And this one, while it does somewhat fall into that, it's much more meaner. And it also, instead of coming from a regular guy approaching 40, this is very much a rock star who's is leaving, and she was nothing but a gold digger and is taking his money. And it's very well done as far as musically and how it sounds. Like it really captures like an old time, like a Chuck Berry, who was famous for, you know, Maybelline, Nadine, Carol. He loved to write songs about with women, with women's names as the title. And like I say, a different voice, I think, on anything else, this feels slapped on. It's like, Dave, I want to sing one of the songs. And Ray gave him one that he wouldn't sing, that didn't really fit, and they tack it on at the end. I honestly think, from the way the rest of the record went, you can drop this, put Noise in, and make Clichés of the World the last track.
Yeah. I see that. I don't like it as an album closer. I'm kind of with you. I think the previous song, you know, Clichés of the World, would be a better album closer, but I kind of see it also where this is so out of place from the rest of the record. Yeah, you tack this on. But it is a great rockin' tune. I have, my last note on this one is, you could probably cross off the name Bernadette with today's influencer instead. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but it does describe a lot of the attitudes of quote unquote social media influencers. But just like politics, I will leave the social commentary out of this. So, all right, this is my 6. Wayne,
4.
Phil,
this song, what it stood out for me is that I dated, after my divorce, I dated this young lady, and we hit it off really well. And then one day, she came up to me and said, "Phil, you need to treat me like a queen." And that's when I said, I don't think I can meet your standards. And that's when I basically walked away. But, you know, that's what I think I got out of Bernadette. This is my worst or my least favorite song. And it's not the lyrics, it's not the arrangement, it's the voice. I don't like Dave Davies singing. I have 2 of his solo albums, and they're not the greatest albums. I mean, I could listen to it once, and I put it back into the sleeve and let it collect dust with some of the other albums that I only listened to once. So,
yeah. You son of a bitch. I know exactly what you're doing. That's Wayne. That's Wayne. Rubbing his notes all over his microphone in an attempt to piss me off, because I keep telling him, I'm like, "Hey, wait until after we do the out to mess with your notes." But you stubborn son of a bitch. All right. This is where I say, did we miss anything? Did we cover everything?
You know, the only thing that we didn't cover is the, you know, Ray and Dave, their unique brotherhood that they have. There was stories or legends that when they're playing on the, on tour, that they would just get in gigantic fisticuffs. They start beating the crap out of each other on stage. I heard that as a legend going on, but the concert that I saw, then they were, you know, pretty cool. But there's rumors and all that stuff that they've they just get on stage and they don't, somebody misses a tune or misses a beat, and you, Ray will go over to Dave and just, you know, cold cock him.
But brothers always get along in bands, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, like AC/DC, the
Youngs. Sure, they got along. The Gallaghers, they totally got along.
Yeah, the Robinsons.
Robinsons got along, right?
All the time.
The Partridge Family, they got along, right?
Yeah, but in different ways, though. So
I know. Yeah. All right. I already mentioned State of Confusion is number one. Any guesses on number two?
Come Dancing.
It's absolutely Come Dancing. Yes. Average score of 8.33 for Come Dancing. We do have a four-way tie.
Oh, jeez.
For third. So average score of 5.67 for Definite Maybe, Don't Forget to Dance, Young Conservatives, and Heart of Gold.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So we've got a top six for this one. Property just missed out. Average score of 5. I blame you two for that. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Well,
divorcees knocking that out.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Yeah. All right. All right, Phil. This was fun yet again. Thanks so much for doing another Kinks record. We have done one other one. If you go to the archives, John Easdale from Dramarama joined us for a Kinks episode. And Wayne, why is the name of that record escaping me right now?
It's Arthur.
Arthur. Yes, Arthur.
And what's unique about it, there was only 4 band members. I don't think there was a keyboard player.
There was not. Yeah, there was not. All right. Anything else you want to promote, Phil?
Well, for those people that are in the San Diego County area, my restaurant, Nick and G's, we do have live music Tuesday through Saturday nights. And the one thing that stands out about our live music is that we've been doing it through COVID, giving all these young independent singers, performers, an opportunity to strut their stuff and show their stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that stood out in that area. They needed music, and everybody needs music. They don't need to watch TV. They can stay off of Facebook. They, come to my restaurant, forget about life for a while, and enjoy 3 hours of great music.
There you go. And we, as I mentioned earlier, we had Ryan Hiller on for an episode. You can go check out his episode on Prince. I did throw out on the socials that I was listening to one of the CDs that you sent to me from Whitney Shea.
Yes.
So we should probably try and get her on the podcast as well.
And, yeah, she's popped by the restaurant and performed a couple of times, and I mentioned it, and I got a couple more CDs that I'm going to get to you for another performer. But I'm going to give a shout out to Ryan. He was one of the originals that came through to the restaurant back in 2020. And at that time he was getting his real estate license, and he can use the excuse of having a third kid. Congratulations, Ryan. But, he sold his first house. And from that point on, he became bourgeois and refuses to come and play at my restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Ryan. Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Cause he always does, I keep track with him. I talk with him every once in a while. And one thing about our restaurant and the location, I think the first night that we had him there, he had 3 gigs lined up from our guests that were there. We have a lot of influential individuals, and he played really well, and he got some private gigs from that. And now all he does is corporate. He's on the news on KUSI TV down in San Diego during the morning every once in a while.
Very good.
He's one of my favorites in San Diego, besides Whitney and a couple of the other ones I'm trying to coax.
It's what it's all about, man. It's It's what it's all about, helping these musicians get noticed and helping them stay in the business. So very yes. cool. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. As a reminder, find all of our old episodes, including Phil's old episode and Melanie's old episode and Ryan's old episode, by going to recordsrevisitedpodcast.com. You can find all of our happenings on our various socials, Facebook page, Records Revisited Podcast, just do a search there. Twitter, at Podcast Records. Wayne, he's on the Instagram. Where are we there?
At Records Revisited Podcast.
And of course, you can find us on all the major platforms. Be sure to subscribe and rate or review us. And of course, this is how Phil is joining us. He's one of our Patreon revisitors. You get episodes early. If you contribute at the guest revisor level like Phil has done, you can join us on an episode to talk about one of your favorite records and promote your restaurant or promote your favorite local artist, whatever you want to do. We're down for it. Go to patreon.com/recordsrevisitedpodcast for all the details on that. All right, Phil, remember how to do the out part?
Absolutely.
All right. So thanks for listening. Please go support the arts. Go to a live show. Buy a t-shirt of the band. Buy a record. Visit a record store, which Wayne and I both did on Record Store Day. But, of course, we'll be back at your local record store on other days as well. We are Records Revisited, and we are
out.